Well, we stand before you and the Lord this morning. And I tremble at both of those, actually. I'm not interested in giving you anything that would cause you to stumble. Nor would I want to paint a wrong picture of our Lord. I want us to be honoring to our precious Heavenly Father this day. One thing we must all acknowledge, I believe, in life. We all use the term temptation, don't we? Sometimes you see a nice cake and you say, that sure is tempting. Sometimes you see a pleasant dish, and we're going to have some of that probably back here after service. We're going to have some dishes that are pretty tempting. And some temptation has really no moral impact, that type of temptation. Sometimes it's better, well, overindulgence isn't good. That doesn't necessarily mean it brings a moral impact, but there are some things that the devil would tempt us with, and I don't know how else to term it. We can sum it all up, and it's the author of evil. The devil himself puts a lot of things before in the path of us. And it's not always easy right at the beginning to recognize it as something that's for my soul. It's not always easy to recognize that it's dangerous, morally dangerous to me. I think the devil is artful with his camouflage. It's hunting season. And there are some children that have went hunting and some adults have went hunting. And now if you was going to go out and try to hunt some turkey today, you'd want to have everything you knew how to about you to be as camouflaged as what you can. Because you don't want that turkey to see you. You want him to come right up into shotgun range. You want him up to where you can kill him. Because you don't want to announce your presence. And this is very much like the devil would like to do to every one of us. He would like to hide in a blind. He would like to camouflage his intent. He would like to approach us in a very acceptable manner. He would like to approach us in the most beautiful, enticing ways. But his purpose of doing so, that we get in shotgun range, deadly proximity. Again, Brother Vernon's not here anymore, but I remember very distinctly the time back here in a Sunday school class when, and I'm sorry, I'm probably going to wear it out a little bit, but there's a good point to this. When talking about the tree in the garden and that tree of knowledge of good and evil, and the Lord said, don't eat of that. And here Eve was over there looking at that tree and being tempted by the fruit and in the proximity of it. And Brother Vernon said, why didn't they just cut that tree down? I think that's a good bit of advice for every one of us. When we recognize a place of temptation or something that would be a vulnerability to my soul, don't walk close to it. Do your best to cut it down. So we want to go into, if I was going to write it on the board over there this morning, I would write down recognizing temptation. And I would like to turn over into James, the first chapter. In the 12th verse, we read, blessed is the man that endures temptation. For when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Let no man say, when he is tempted of God, let no man say, when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. I want to stop the reading there. The temptation, blesses every man that endures temptation. That doesn't mean, I think, that we learn how to coexist so much. We recognize that we're always going to have temptations face us. We're going to have to learn how to deal with it, but not make friends with it. There's a difference between coexisting and a friendly that I... But the Lord would have us always have our guard open, up. There are people who are avid turkey hunters, and they say you get an old tom that's learned. He's been hunted before. And those who go out after the turkey, they'll take a turkey call, a hen call. Sounds like a hen. Now make these squawks. It sounds like a hen. And his antenna is up. He's listening for that call, and he starts heading that direction. But an old tom that has been hunted for a while, his eyes are pretty... There's something there that's not quite right. It wasn't there yesterday. Something's different. And that sound that I just heard, it sounds almost like it, but not like any hens I know in this area. And he starts having... His antenna is up. His awareness. He's quit being vulnerable to temptation. He recognizes it. He becomes very sensitive. He becomes very aware. He hasn't made friends with the fact that danger is around. He has always allowed that danger to cause his soul... I'm thinking about spiritually now too. That his very life is in danger. I want to tell you, our souls are targets for the devil. And he'll use everything he can. So many things will present itself as pleasant and acceptable. Joyful. Not all joy is bad. But something that harms your soul is bad. What was it about? Said Moses chose to suffer the afflictions of the people of God rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. He realized that he could have enjoyed in Pharaoh's house was actually a detriment to his soul. And he chose something that was less pleasurable, it seemed, anyway. So, blessed is the man that... let me say it like this. Blessed is the man that recognizes temptation and is willing to always be on guard. Endure that temptation. Stand up under it. Be willing to be fortified. Be willing to recognize this thing that's out for his soul and recognize the poison in it and not be willing to let the enticement weaken his resolve. Because it will, if we allow it. I would like... Well, let's go ahead a little bit more here in James. Let no man say when he's tempted of God, I am tempted of God. It's easy. Oh, back in the 60s, there was a term that got popularized, bled over into the 70s. And it was a term that people threw out there as an excuse to say, well, here's why I did what I did. I'm going to blame it on somebody besides me. So I'm going to say the devil made me do it. So since he did it, he made me do it, that means I'm not culpable. I don't have any real responsibility here. It's easy for us to say, and it was flippantly thrown out there when somebody did something wrong, said, well, the devil made me do it. It's almost as though we just got comfortable with the devil having his way in my life. Quit making excuses. That was back then. Yes, Sister Marsh said, you did it yourself. Isn't that what you said? Amen. We did it ourselves. The devil has influence, but we let him do it. We got a hold of it and we did it ourselves. Don't make excuses. Own who I am and where I am. If I find myself walking over there close to a tree that has pretty fruit on it, that the Lord said don't get close to it, it's my fault. He'd already said, don't do it. And we have a right not to. God gave every one of us in here the ability to say no. And the ability to act out of that no. Each one of us has that. The Lord has graced mankind. The Lord has empowered mankind with the ability to say no. Every man has that right and that ability. So let's not capitulate that to the enemy of our soul. This isn't of God. I have heard people almost, well, I've had conversations, well-meaning people, I believe. I think they believed what they were saying, but I disagree. I've heard people say, well, it was the Lord that really had them do that. The Lord isn't tempting anybody with evil. He's not tempted with evil, and He's not going to tempt you with evil. That's of the devil. The devil's doing that one. Lord, help us each one to recognize, to have our antenna up. How else do we say it? That awareness, that on guardness, that watching and prayerfulness, that recognizing something doesn't smell right. Haven't you heard that term? That doesn't ring right. I can't put my finger on what's going on there, but something about it doesn't sound right. Something is just, when you see that, when you recognize it, just back off. Give it a wide berth. Go around it and let the thing reveal itself. Because that's the Lord in His mercy trying to give us some caution in life. Over in Micah, the 6th chapter. It's the latter part of the Old Testament here. Micah, the sixth chapter. I would like to probably, where do we want to start here? I'm just going to go ahead and start with a third verse of the 6th chapter of Micah. This is a story, this is a scene that God had done so much. The prophet here, this man of God, this brother Micah was expounding a message, writing down what the Lord had told him to these people. I imagine he expounded it to them. They heard what he had to say. But he said, the Lord, there's a problem here. Something, there's a disconnect between you who should be the followers, the happy followers of the Lord. Something has gone in here and caused a separation. You don't even respect God to the point that you're obeying Him. You've been willing to find other entities to try to worship and give your time and effort to. And the Lord is saying, remember me. I'm the one that brought you across that river Jordan. I'm the one that caused the Red Sea to mound up on both sides. And you walked across on dry land. I'm the one that spoke to Pharaoh. I'm the one that told him what I wanted him to do. And he hardened his heart. And he hardened his heart more than multiple times. And came to the point I spoke to him again. And that word hardened his heart again. I hardened him. Because he had set up such a hardness. He had been unwilling to hear my reproof. I tell you, when the Lord hardens us, we're in trouble. This was the Lord working mightily for His people. I think Pharaoh had a choice. He could have listened at the beginning to what Moses said for him to do, to let my people go. He could have listened to that. And he could have said, yes, Lord, I believe you're right. And he could have said, let me go with them. Could I be one of those that follow you? That could have been a different story, I believe, with Pharaoh. But it ended up that he hardened his heart. And then it went on and Pharaoh said that the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. Pharaoh was in trouble. He didn't recognize his temptation, did he? But the Lord, in His mighty way, began to work mightily for the children of Israel and brought them out with a mighty hand, brought them to the Red Sea. And the armies were following hard on their heels, and they felt like that, okay, Lord, that Moses, you brought us out here to die. We're trapped here. Is that the reason why you did it? And Moses went to the Lord and said, Lord, you hear these cries. We're in a real close place. And the Lord said, Moses, pick up that rod that you have in your hand and you stretch it out over the waters in the sight of the people that they might see, they might know that I am God. And they saw, and none of us here have seen this, have we? But if we'd have been there that day, we'd have seen waters mound up on both sides and a dry path through the middle. That's the God that they had seen. That's what they had seen. And so, yes, it is amazing. It's absolutely, utterly amazing. Now, this many years afterwards, all the stories and the testimonies of the fathers had come down to them. And they'd come to this place now, and they'd have said, well, it's really, really not very much. And they cast it aside and began to look toward other gods. And the Lord said, I've got a controversy. I've got a problem with that. It's amazing to me all that I've done for you, and you've cast me aside. Oh, my people. 6th chapter, 3rd verse. Oh, my people, what have I done unto thee? Wherein have I wearied thee? What have I done to make you so tired of me? Have I not treated you right? Testify against me. I brought thee up out of the land of Egypt and redeemed thee out of the house of servitude, out of servants. I have set before thee Moses and Aaron and Miriam. Oh, my people, remember now how Balak, king of Moab, consulted. He wanted you cursed when you were out there in the wilderness coming up to this area. And he wanted you cursed. There was something about you. He knew the Lord was in the hand of the Lord was on you, and he wanted you cursed. And Balak went to Balaam, asked him to come and curse the people. And how the Lord turned what the curse that Balak wanted into a blessing. Every time Balaam opened his mouth, the Lord didn't allow him to curse the people, caused him to bless the people. Oh, my people, remember what he did, how the Lord did that for you, that ye may know the righteousness of the Lord. 6th verse now. Wherein shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before the high God? Wherewith? What can I bring before the high God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves of a year old? Well, when you study the law of Moses, there was some requirement that they would come with a burnt offering and with calves of a year old. But the prophet, the brother here is telling, it's more than that that the Lord wants. We can do things because it's just a law written down. And we can do it just out of wooden and impersonal obedience. Well, that's just what we do. And the children of Israel had gotten to where that they would, I think they had it in their mind that they were appeasing God. God doesn't want to be appeased. He wants to be worshipped. There's a difference. God's not this God that's trying to look for an opportunity to harm any one of us. There's plenty of reasons he could find if he wanted to harm us. But he wants to redeem people. He wants people to amend their ways and turn from their wicked ways and come to God and worship the God of heaven. Why? Is it because he's a narcissistic man? Because he's a God. Is it because he's narcissistic at all? No, it's because in obeying him, we can hear his voice and feel his touch and recognize his guiding hand, that he would guide us around the pitfalls of life, the dangers that would harm our future, that we could build in. You see, the temptation is to build things into our life that would cause destruction in our future. And we don't understand that and recognize it very well. We're humans. That temptation is not well. Wouldn't you like to see the devil always clad in a cloak, a red cape, and a set of horns and a black pitchfork? He wouldn't be nearly as successful if we saw him like that. But he doesn't do that. He clothes himself as an angel of light. Lord, help us to have some better discernment. So the devil comes in such sneaky ways. And to these people, there were things that they had gotten involved with. And he says, oh, my people, remember now, 6th verse, wherewith shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before the high God? Shall I come before Him with burnt offerings and calves of a year old? Is that sufficient? Is that all God wants? I don't think so. It was something that they were supposed to do. Seventh verse now. Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams? Is that what He wants? Does He need more to be appeased? Should I give Him thousands of rams or 10,000 of rivers of oil? Is that what? Do I just need to do more? Will that appease Him? Would that work? Or do I need, as the gods of the Moabites, the gods of all these Moloch, these other gods that people set up, Baal and Balaam, all these other gods that were set up out there, and they required, some of them required the firstborn. And He goes on, would that appease the Lord? Would I give Him my firstborn for the sin of my soul? Would that work? No. The rivers of oil, the 10,000 lambs, or rams, all this. We're not here to appease God. We're here to worship God. We can come today to a God who says, come to me. He's not saying, I'm going to kill you if you come any closer. He's saying, I made a way that you can come near to me. That I can quench the thirst of your soul. This is the God we serve. He's not one trying to harm us in any way, but He's paving a way that you and I might know Him. That we might recognize the devil when he's in there trying to cause harm and destruction into my life. Oh, this morning we have a loving and a real good shepherd that's interested in helping you and I go through life and get victories over all the wiles of the devil. Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000 rivers of oil? Shall I give the firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He hath showed thee, O man, He has made Himself known. He has showed thee, O man, what is good and what doth the Lord require of thee. But to do justly, to love mercy and to walk humbly with thy God. Did He lend any more definition of that than what He just said? What's justly? Do you know what justice is? That's part of our human understanding. What's fair and right? Do just. If you're going to look to me to always define what is just, I could be wrong, but I want every one of us to get alone before the Lord and seek His face till we get His mind, that we might understand Him and we'll know what justice is. There's righteousness mixed up in justice. Sometime in my human understanding of justice, I might be wrong. I can say, oh, this man has done such evil. I think the best thing for him to do is just corporately get together and take his life. That may not be justice at all. God may not be in that mix. There's all kinds of things that we can decide in my human understanding. But we need to get alone with the Lord and allow Him to tender mercy. He loves mercy too. Isn't that the next one? And what's mercy? Compassion's definitely in there. The point I'm really wanting to try to make to every one of us here today, it's your responsibility. It's our privilege and responsibility to hear the voice of the Lord and obey Him. And in doing so, there will be justice, there will be mercy, there will be His conduct, His spirit, His character begin to be grown in my very soul. And I'll treat you differently, and I'll treat my neighbors differently, and I'll live differently, I'll change. Sometimes I only know how to change so much, but the mercy of the Lord in time will cause us to keep growing, and that we might walk in the fullness of His light day by day. Lord, today I want to understand. Shine Your light upon my pathway. Help me to be more like You. Help me to be merciful. Help me to be just. Help me to be right. Help me to be holy in Your sight, Lord.
Lord, I want to walk with you today.
This idea of confronting and recognizing temptation. These people, they dealt with it, and they dealt with it and according to their human understanding, and they fell. And the Lord said, what have I done? What could I have done more? Ninth verse says this, the Lord's voice crieth unto the city, the man of wisdom shall see thy name. Is that right? Shall see thy name. Hear ye the rod, and who hath appointed it? The Lord's voice crieth in the city. There's wisdom, there is examples of success and failure all around us. You know, the devil didn't come to the person that is out there on the street today that is bound by whatever vice that they're bound by, and didn't tell them that at the beginning, didn't come and say, this will give you a little pleasure right now, but in a little bit, I'm going to have my claws in you and I'm not going to let you go. The devil didn't say that. The devil didn't tell him that I'll get you maybe on heroin tomorrow, and maybe from heroin you'll go to fentanyl and all the other things that begin to degrade a human, to destroy their lives. There's not many homeless people that I've talked to that if you begin to talk with them and you ask them, is this what you want to do? Is this? Most of the time they'll say, no, it's not. But I don't know how to get out of it. And what they're really saying most of the time is that I'm stuck here and I don't know how to break the habit. They're bound. The devil never said that to them at the beginning. And here they find themselves now in a place where they're trapped. I would like to go to an area of the Scripture that if you'd have been here last Sunday night, you'd have heard us talk about some of it. But to me, it is very explanatory, reveals. It's a story that to me is impactful. Again, I think it's something that talks to us about human weaknesses, temptation, that somehow that even though we know in our mind it's not good for us, somehow the appeal of walking too close seems to be something that in our human mind we're willing to take the risk. Judges, the 16th chapter. You want to turn there? I'm going to start off with the 6th verse. Judges, the 16th chapter, is a story of a man. He was, from the very beginning of his life, was given, well, there was a vow that was going to be on him as a babe, that the Lord gave this child to these parents, and he said, this one vow, he's going to be a Nazarite unto me. And that vow of the Nazarite, I can't tell you all its origin or how all the reasons for it, but back then it was a shame for a man to have the hair like this, like Samson had long hair. It was never cut. That's how long it was, and he bore that, and he had that on his person from childhood up. But along with that, the Lord said, I'll give him supernatural strength. And he had that. This man was used to meeting all obstacles. See, he was used to meeting anything that was opposed to what his purpose was and just overcoming it mightily. Or there's a story of him meeting a young lion in the way. You remember that one? Took a young lion that met him, grabbed him and ripped him with his bare hands. Killed this young lion. Parents saw it. I think they did. Anyway, I was on the trip on a road when he's going out with his parents. Killed the lion, and there it was. He went on, and the Philistines, who were the oppressors that time of the people of Israel, Judaic nation, These people were oppressing them, and it was in the land of Gaza. That's where they were from. And here, there was this conflict between the Philistines and the Judaic nation. And there was a time that Samson was tricked, and he was angry. And he went out, and he caught, was it 30 foxes? It was a number of foxes. I forget the number right now. And he tied their tails with brands of fire and turned them loose while they was running from the fire behind them on their tail. And he went through the dried fields of grain and set them on fire. And we think that's quite something. I don't know even how he chased down that many foxes and caught them, but he did it. And tied something on their tail. I think I'd been bit all over my hands if I went trying to do that, but he got it accomplished. And then there came a time when the Philistines came out against him in great number, and he grabbed a bone off the ground and picked it up, and with that jawbone killed 1,000 men. This is Samson. This is this fellow that was gaining victory. Any obstacle that was before him, he always got the victory. A lion, rip him apart, batch of foxes. I'm going to get even with these Philistines for what's happening. And he did that, and 1,000 men he slew with the jawbone of an ass. And then there came a time that he was shut up in a city. He was there, and they said, we're going to keep him inside this city, and we're going to band together tomorrow, and we're going to get this man. Well, middle of the night, he gets up, and he takes the gates of the city and puts them on his back. Not just the gates. He didn't rip the gates off the hinges. He ripped the post out of the ground they were attached to. Put them up on his back and hauled them up one at a time, I suppose. I don't know, one at a time. He got both of them anyway. Up on that hill, up on that mountain. He did that. This is Samson. Then he met a woman. Women aren't bad, don't get me wrong. When I said it like that. I'm so glad the Lord made women. But over here in Judges, the 16th chapter, we need to recognize, I would like for us to recognize the enticing nature of temptation. I would like us to recognize the purpose of temptation and the end result of giving over to it. Judges, the 16th chapter and the 6th verse. Delilah said to Samson, "Tell me, I pray thee, wherein thy great strength lieth, and wherewith thou mightest be bound to afflict thee." If the devil ever showed up in a red cape and horns and a black pitchfork, he did now. How clear does it need to be? Does it need to be any more clear than that? Delilah said, "What makes you strong? If you just let me know what makes you strong, I want to take your strength away so we can bind you and so we can afflict you." And he didn't walk out the door. Amazing, isn't it? Shattering to my human mind to think that somebody can say, "If you'll stay here a little longer, I'll kill you. That's what I want to do. So just stick around here and I'll figure out a way to get you killed." Did it with a smile on her face and told him what she wanted to do. Now we can look back at this incident in Samson's life and we can say, "Oh, Samson, if I'd have been in your shoes, I'd have ran." You see, temptation seldom seems so dangerous. That's what this was stated. Temptation almost always seems to
wrestle in our mind this drawing away of my own lust and being enticed, this thing that goes, this wrestling in my mind, I recognize this is not good for me. Everybody else that has went down this road of indulging in this vice that's out there in the world, everybody else that's went down this road, it's not been good for their life. But I'm a little different. I've killed 1,000 men with a jawbone. I have caught all these foxes and it was more than 30, wasn't it? Was it 300 foxes? I was going to say, I think I'm way low on that number. 300 foxes. Why? I've caught 300 foxes and tied fire to their tails. And I've done this. I've grabbed a city gate and packed it off on my back with a post in the ground. I dug it out and I pulled it out of the ground by my might and I packed it up on that hill. These things have never, I've always been able to handle the temptation or the problem that arrived. That lion had nothing to do with me. I just ripped him. I saw he was ripped in front of my own eyes. And this is just a woman. And I think I can handle it. This little temptation, this thing right here before me, it's really, I'm a man. I can handle it. I've always been able to handle it. But she said, I want to afflict you. He should have run. Why didn't he? I believe the wrestling in his mind and the enticement of his own flesh laid him vulnerable to destruction. I'm going to read out of my phone. It's a little easier for me to read. Seventh verse, and Samson said unto her, if you bind me with 7 green withs, never been dried, you get that done, I'll be just like any other man. Then the lords of the Philistines brought her these instruments, these 7 green withs, and she bound him. And there were men in the chamber lying in wait, abiding with her there. And she said unto him after she bound him, says, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he brake the withs as they were thread of tow when it's touched with the fire. So his strength was not known. Oh, I can handle it. See? I can enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. I can handle it. I've always been able to handle it. But he stayed there. And Delilah was, her purpose had been thwarted. So she feigned as though she was hurt. Behold, thou hast mocked me and told me these lies. Now tell me, I pray thee, wherewith thou mightest be bound. Tell me how we can harness your strength, how we can take it away. We can get it bound up. Tell me that. That doesn't even sound like Samson ever once said, why do you want to know my strength? He just kept right on. And he said unto her, if thou bind me fast with new ropes, you know, it's over and over, the story goes. She did it. She did exactly what he said that she could do. 12th verse, Delilah therefore took those new ropes and bound him, and then said again, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And there were liars in wait. Strange set of words, I thought, when I read that. I know what she was meaning, that what the writer was meaning here, that people were hiding there, lying in wait, but the word liars, it wasn't very honest, was it? I don't know even if you're going to spell that. I'm horrible at spelling. And I don't know where the liars, if somebody, a group of people not telling the truth, is it spelled the same way as what this, isn't it different? My wife's shaking her head. No, it's different. So it sounds the same. These people,
I just want to tell you that there's always some, not only injustice, but there's some untruth when the devil starts using temptation. He's going to be lying. Not going to tell you the truth. He's going to be hiding it. Liars in wait. Forgive me for taking license with the word. But what I'm telling you, describing the devil, I'm telling you the truth on that one. He's sneaky and he's wily and he's going to do his best to set us in slippery places, making us think always that we're going to step in something that's good and firm. He's a liar. Well, he got up and broke those off his arms like they were thread. 13th verse. Delilah said unto him, "Hitherto thou hast mocked me and told me lies. Tell me wherewith thou mightest be bound." And he said unto her, he's getting a little closer now, "If you take my hair and you weave it in a certain way." Again, I'm telling you, if the devil ever came with a red cape and a set of horns and a black pitchfork, it was here. He should have seen it. Should have. But there was something evidently within Samson that made him feel like he could handle it. But it kept getting closer and closer and closer and closer till now he said, "Well, you know, everything I've been talking to you about was tying my hands behind my back or something." And I knew that would. She kept working and working until, kept getting closer. "Well, it has something to do with my hair." He was starting to tell part of the truth. "If you weave the 7 locks of my head with the web." 14th verse, "And she fastened it with the pin." She did it. She did exactly every time what Samson said you could do. "If you'll do this, I'll be like any other man." She tried everything he said. Exactly what he told her. This time she did it again. "She fastened it with a pin and said to him, 'The Philistines be upon thee, Samson.' And he awoke out of his sleep and went away with a pin of the beam and the web and just took off. And she said unto him, 'How can you tell me that you love me when thy heart is not with me? Thou hast mocked me these 3 times and hast not told me wherein thy great strength lieth. You have made a mockery of me.'" Why didn't Samson turn around and say, "But you've been trying to mock me"? Really, why didn't he just run? Flee, youthful lusts. Don't give it quarter. Cut the tree down. Don't notice the beautiful fruit of the tree. You know, Samson had a lot of godly women he could have chosen from over there on this other side. He didn't have to be down in this territory. Didn't have to. "Tell me where your great strength lies." You notice how much she was interested in stealing his strength? It was her purpose to try to cause him to fall. Oh, listen. Young people, whether you be male or female here this morning, if the spouse that you're seeking out won't bless your life and uphold you in godliness and righteousness, run from them. I don't care how pretty they are, or how manly and how strong he might be, don't let your soul be at risk. "Came to pass when she pressed him daily with her words and urged him so that his soul was vexed unto death." How true that word is. He was being vexed unto his destruction. That was the end result. It seemed pleasant to toy with the fire. It seemed something that was something that surely he could take fire into his bosom and "I've had foxes and I've caught them and I've done all. Surely I can take this fire into my bosom." But folks, you take this one into your bosom, you'll get burned. Can't do it. That temptation should have been screaming to his mind, This temptation is for my very soul. And yet he stayed. Vexed him unto death. And right at that point, knowing how dedicated this temptation was. There's another word here, but its purpose was undeterred. The intent was to try to destroy him. What? Persistence, yes. This was so persistent, and it was for the purpose of destroying him. And in the midst of this point, he was weakened. He'd stayed there. His strength had already begun to wane, folks. If he was truly a strong man, he would have been morally strong and said, I'm not going to stay here any longer. I'm headed back. Whatever you got to do, whatever you got to do, but I'm out of here. Not going to be part of this. And he was weakened. His resolve, his purpose had got blurred in his mind. Then he told her all his heart. What an incredibly sad statement. Why, Samson? Why? You had so much going for you, Samson. Why? When the temptation didn't even try to hide itself, it told you what it wanted to do. Why, Samson, did you tell her all your heart? And he said to her, there's not been a razor cut my hair, been up on my head. For I've been a Nazarite unto God from my mother's womb until now. I added that until now. What causes a man to come to such low places? Oh, he toyed with something he should have never toyed with. He opened his heart to something he should have never been vulnerable to. That it screamed danger. He knew that obedience and bow to the Lord was the very source of his strength. I've been a Nazarite unto the Lord all these years. And now, I'm telling you, if you really want to make me like other men, cut my hair. Why? If I be shaven, then my strength will go from me, and I shall become weak and be like other men. Then Delilah said, he told me his heart. I know there was something about what he said, the way he said that. I know he's telling me the truth now. To me, again, it's an utterly sad moment. Had so much potential. So much it could have been. And I look at us today. This should be a lesson. Every one of you are so valuable to the Lord. Many of us perhaps here today have taken that vow to the Lord and said, I'm yours till death do us part. Or maybe as a Christian we should say, till death does bring us nearer to you. Many of us have given that Christian vow to the Lord. I'm yours. I'm not turning aside. But the Lord has many, many different... The devil has many, many enticements out there in the world that can look so temporarily pleasant, that can be so tempting, and it will look so small. And you've heard of gateway things? It's tied a lot of times, gateway drugs, and I agree with that too. But I'm going to expand it into gateway temptations. Most of the time it seems small and insignificant. And it can look almost like a pleasant tree with a pleasant fruit. To make one wise, surely if I do this, it'll be okay. Oh, I've walked with the Lord now for, these 40-some years.
And the Lord has established me, and I'm strong, and I have raised my hand with a bone in it. The Lord has given me victory over victory, and I feel almost self-sufficient. You're not. And the devil is wearing away all he can. In this generation, the devil is doing all he can to wear away our resolve and our purpose. And he'll give such pleasant reasoning to the mind to make us wise, you see. Be able to embrace something that is intended to weaken my soul. That's the purpose. That's what the devil is trying to do with every one of us here today, is try somehow get our focus off of the Lord. I've been a Nazarite until now. But he was getting ready to change course. Don't change course. Let's stay true to our vow to the Lord. The sad thing, the next few verses will bring out. She cut her hair. She cut his hair. And said again, the Philistines be upon me, Samson. And he said, I'll get up like I did before. And there was nothing there. He didn't know that the Lord had departed from him. Somewhere in all his toying with temptation, the Lord had leaked out. That's a high caution to me. I don't care how many years you've lived for the Lord. Don't toy with the temptation. Be careful. The next thing they did after they got control over him was they stuck something in his eyes and put him out. That's what the devil's wanting to do to every one of us. Oh, let's anchor our soul in the Lord. Let's be true and faithful. And let's not toy with the temptations. Pray for me. I want to serve you.